Good afternoon, and welcome to this special edition of the Hancock Horizon Investments Economic Update call. Hancock Horizon Investments is providing this call for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, we can take them at the end of the call. Please email them to greg.helesky@whitneybank.com, and he'll take them at the end. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Greg Helesky, who's going to serve as the moderator with John Portwood and Jeffrey Tangus joining him. So, Greg, please begin.
Thank you, Ashley. We just wanted to address everyone, our clients and coworkers, with the situation on Brexit, since it seems to be stealing all the headlines. It's certainly a situation that we've been monitoring for some time, and our position has always been it's a significant event, but more of a European event than a U.S. event. Certainly with the U.K. deciding to leave the EU, it was a bit of a surprise, although the polls were very tight. It could have gone either way, and I think most were leaning that they would probably remain 52% and 48% leave. Turned out to be the exact opposite, with 52% voting to leave and 48% to remain. Of course, stock markets in Europe sold off significantly, somewhere between 4 and 12%. Money was moving out of risk assets or stocks into bonds, into the safety of bonds. So, you know, certainly it was causing gyrations in Europe. So, of course, we felt like our markets would be impacted just from the spillover effects. Early this morning, it looked like the markets could open up down about 5%. But actually, as the market open began to near, the futures actually began to move upwards. So for the most part, we've been trading within 2 to 3% negative territory, which really just puts us back exactly in terms of the S&P 500 where we were last week. So we really haven't sold off significantly relative to Europe. I think probably one of the most important things to view about this event is that there's really two prongs to it. One, it's a short-term event, and I think, you know, we're going to try and address some of the things that have been done to mitigate any kind of damage. And then it's a long-term event, which is probably going to be with us at least through 2018. And that could have some longer-term implications for world economies, including the U.S. economy. Given most of the global economies right now are near or in recession, the timing of the vote and the result is really kind of unfavorable. It's certainly creating more uncertainty in the markets, and that's certainly, you know, not what we need right now as we're trying to actually crawl out of our recession and you know, get growth going again in the U.S. You know, the Fed keeps talking about tightening interest rates, yet we're still not seeing enough growth for them to justify tightening interest rates. But the central banks around the globe have been coordinating their battle plans, or if you want to call it emergency plans, to help contain this. The Fed said that it's prepared to provide dollar liquidity. We saw the dollar actually climb a little bit. The Bank of England has undertaken contingency plans with other central banks and the U.S. Treasury to also mitigate any kind of issues. Excuse me. But again, this uncertainty is certainly not what we needed at this point in time as we're trying to, you know, improve growth in the U.S. But given that, you know, we're down, but down really minimally, I think if you're looking at, you know, a lot of traders and hedge funds probably took positions on either side, and the ones that, you know, guessed wrong in terms of the vote certainly I have to unwind those positions. So I think, you know, we could easily have a week of market volatility with hedge funds and trades going on to kind of reverse what they had done prior to the vote. Given that the UK is going to leave, it still has to go to Parliament, and they have to pass a resolution to actually exit, and that can take 2 years. So thus the date of 2018, the EU is probably going to be a little more flexible with other EU members to prevent additional referendums, and because right now other members of the EU are considering perhaps they should vote to exit the EU. So I think there's some fear that that could actually happen, with the UK now setting a precedent for that. The greatest risk probably to contagion to the global markets is the continued rise in the value of the dollar. As dollar rises, it makes debt, particularly in China and the emerging markets, much more expensive. And, of course, that will impact their economies and people that trade with them. And that could ultimately spill over into other economies. We expect that the U.S. markets are going to sell off probably, it's short term, but in the long run, until we see those spillover effects, we probably won't see any kind of significant downturn unless, again, those economic ripples start to flow into our economy. Again, the dollar was up, I think it was roughly up 4% against the euro overnight. And central banks, again, have committed to react strongly, providing liquidity and supporting currencies. As far as the bond markets, and Jeff, you might want to jump in here, but so far this morning, most of the bond markets do not seem to be sending any negative signals about growth in developed markets. So, again, it seems like it's more of a focus on emerging markets and China.
That's right, Greg. As a matter of fact, of course, rates are down as a flight to quality here in the United States. But corporate spreads are narrowing, which means that people are having they have confidence in corporate America here. So it's actually been a positive thing here on the fixed income side.
John, did you have some comments also on the fixed income markets or some of the macro implications?
I was just thinking, just to expand a little bit on your comment, that it would be a couple of years, or we've got a couple of years here, I guess, while the Brexit idea is contemplated in Parliament, and while they try to work out, some details with the European Union. We'll have to see how that goes, and as it goes, I guess we'll have quite a bit of impact on what happens economically. I was just thinking that before the Brexit vote, the markets were relatively comfortable with attempts to paper over the European Union financial difficulties with QE, with quantitative easing. And we've talked about this off and on for years, ever since the crash, and certainly for the last 3 or 4 years, with the idea being that at some point the EU is going to have to completely restructure. Some countries may leave, but they had unfavorable demographics that were developing rather at a relatively significant rate. Their population is aging. They got employment problems. They got too much debt, et cetera, et cetera. And something eventually was going to have to be done about that. So it's as if we've been living through a continuing crisis that occasionally is pushed into the background by QE and attempts by the European Central Bank to, kind of keep things under control and paper things over. Now, after the vote, it appears that the Band-Aid has been ripped off, and it's time to go beyond a simple near-term solution, and now you need some kind of real coordinated policy actions to try to bring some better balance into the Eurozone economy. And how that works out and how the politicians, whether or not they rise to the occasion, I guess, is going to tell the tale. But, theoretically, trade will continue. Just because Britain is out of the European Union doesn't mean that people are going to stop buying Jaguars, for example, from England or whatever. Pick something. Obviously, we trade with Europe. And we're not part of the European Union. And as Greg mentioned earlier, a lot of it is political. People are more interested in national sovereignty now than they were a while back. Opinion polls in France and Where else? The Netherlands, maybe Italy, suggest that they might like to have a referendum on EU membership, too. And all, again, all this gets back to the economic difficulties that have existed in the world following the biggest credit bust since the 1930s, you know, back in 2008, and the inability of central bank quantitative easing to really do a great deal about it in terms of bringing some prosperity to the man in the street, so to speak. And that's where a lot of the difficulty lies currently. And, you know, we see it here. We see, you know, anti-establishment parties on the rise in Europe. And a lot of what happens from here, I guess, in terms of what happens to the world economy and how we transition into better times ahead depends on, to a large degree, I guess, on what the politicians can figure out between now and then.
Yeah, I was wondering also, given that the amount of, you know, with us at least in a pre-tightening mode, trying to tie up all our liquidity programs, you got Europe still trying to pump liquidity into their economies, and I kind of wonder, you know, at what point, you know, there's some discussion on whether our quantitative easing and our easy money policies were really as effective as the Fed thought they would be. And, you know, if it really does get tough in Europe, you know, are there other things that the European central banks can do to try and stimulate growth, do you think?
That's a good question, Greg. I'm not sure I really know the answer to that. It time may be what we need more than anything else, I guess, but it appears there's far too much debt. And some people have talked about ways to create, to eliminate that problem by simply writing off the debt. Or in the case of the Greek debt, for example, Greece will never pay off its debt. And some people argue that the answer is to simply make every European Union country take a piece of the hit, you know, wipe out Greek debt, Greece's debt, and let them start over. But then you got Portugal has a problem and Italy has a problem. Something like 17-18% of Italian bank loans are non-performing currently. So, you know, there are a lot of issues to deal with, and it is going to be a very complicated process. And I guess because of that, we're going to have to be get used to, I guess, this kind of volatility both ways, as it appears somebody has a solution and then maybe down the road, you know, the solution disappears and we have another bout of negativity, I guess. And I think everybody's going to have to get used to some pretty volatile markets for a time until something is figured out. And there's probably no really great solution to this that anybody can come up with in the near term. We're just going to have to live over it.
Well, yeah, I think the fact that you brought up Greece, I was going to bring that up too. That we that had been in the headlines for what, at least 5-6 years now, and what we're going to do with Greece and their economic impact to the global economies are really insignificant. And I think even looking at the UK, it still only accounts for something like 2% of global growth. So again, it's probably not significant, but more significant to the remaining EU. And I think, again, taking a look at a longer-term implication of this vote and decision to leave is that, you know, it's going to take at least 2 years to renegotiate all the trade agreements and tariffs and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's where the unknowable is at this point. And, you know, probably the biggest impact – the negative impact, you know, if the dollar continues to climb, one, there's just the immediate implication that it's going to make the U.S. less competitive at a time that we, you know, want to be as most competitive as we can be. And second of all, the impact, of course, on the debt of the emerging markets in China. So I think really that's the long term where probably we will be focusing our sights on to see what, you know, what is transpiring, what is evolving in the foreign markets in terms of whether or not we would actually change our policy response in terms of our investment objectives, investment stance. And, you know, typically we focus more on expected returns, on valuations, and there's always going to be geopolitical problems going on, as I think Warren Buffett once said, if you wait for blue skies, you'll never invest. And so, you know, this is a high-profile event, historically significant. I think one of the other significant political risks or implications is, you know, Europe has been trying for so long to have a unified trade zone, to have a unified currency. And that was one of the strange things where Britain, you know, did not adopt the euro. They continued to use the pound. That would compete on global markets with the U.S. dollar. And again, I think the biggest risk, and that's probably why Greece hasn't gone and accommodations have been made for them, is that they want to save face, basically, that they, you know, continue to want to do this. So in terms of the impact to our client portfolios and investments, I think from an equity standpoint, you know, we mentioned in our investment perspective, you know, you're going to continue to see volatility in the equity markets. You know, if that is a big concern to you, again, maybe you want to reconsider or re-examine your exposure to stocks, you know, depending on where you, what your age is and how, what your time horizon is. So certainly that's going to be our focus going forward in terms of monitoring this situation. And in terms of, again, if things slow down, I mean, certainly rates went down as money flowed into the safe haven assets or bonds. So that could also prolong the Fed from raising rates, particularly if, you know, our economy doesn't show any strength. The Fed is still in kind of a wait-and-see posture. So, again, fixed income returns, and Jeff, jump in if you want to, are probably going to be, you know, kind of what they've been over the last few years.
Well, fixed income has offered just a great countermeasure, a great shock absorber to the volatility here. And that's the reason why we like to build balanced portfolios. It's certainly, you know, in volatile times like these, the temptation is always to try to lurch at a change in course or make some hasty decision. And the reality is the nature of this situation with Britain leaving the EU is really one that's going to take place over a couple of years. So it's not a situation that requires a decision today or even this week or next week. Nobody knows yet really how this whole thing will unfold. But you know, certainly the focus we have on domestic securities, both stocks and bonds, is in this environment especially is a great place to be, because we stand to be really the best place in the world to invest for quite some time. But regardless of that, it really is a situation that that as we monitor it, we may make alterations along the way. But a good solid balanced portfolio, stocks and bonds, continues to make a lot of sense in this environment.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. As you said, I think there's, you know, there are a lot of people that try to jump ahead of these events and think that they can, you know, circumvent the downside. And again, you know, if they're that concerned about that, perhaps a balanced portfolio is a better solution. Again, you're not perhaps earning as high an interest rate as you have in the past, but it does provide that counterbalance to the downward move in equity markets. So I think, again, that's real important for our clients to consider, particularly if they're nervous about it. So just to, I guess, wrap up the call, we will continue to monitor the situation. Again, we don't think that there are any significant implications to the U.S., to our investment portfolios, in terms of negative impact from this decision. But again, things can change if things begin to evolve negatively and it begins to negatively impact our outlook. We certainly wouldn't hesitate to make any changes in our investment outlook. And we understand that, you know, you're concerned about the effects on your investments by these significant events and this one in particular. And, you know, in the future, we'll continue to communicate with you our stance through conference calls such as this one, through our monthly investment perspective, or directly to you from, you know, from your portfolio manager or your relationship manager. And John, Jeff, do you have any additional comments?
No, Greg.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, I don't see any questions out there. So, Ashley, I think we can wrap up the call.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon and a good weekend.